As many of you know, I'm from Jamaica, and I came to the U.S. when I was 20 years old, and a couple months ago, I went back to Jamaica to visit, and it was my most dramatic and interesting and fun visit or vacation ever. So I'm going to give you a little glimpse into it. And you may or may not agree with me. The third generation of our nuclear family are about 28 in number. And the siblings of us, we are 10 in number. And The Gen 2, we're calling them, Generation 2, has taken over the family reunions. They're now ranging in age from 18 to 43. So they're fully adult, and they're taking this thing over, and they're better organizers than we ever were. So we have everything planned and everything laid out perfectly. The highlight of our reunion, well, there are two. One, I was going to officiate at the wedding of my niece. And the other one was we were going to make a trip back to the ancestral home in the western end of the island in the parish of Hanover. So we rented a bus, a 36-passenger or something like that bus. We filled it up, and having jump seats and everything out, and we drove through the hills, off past Montego Bay, winding roads, had to pull over really tight to the side to allow another vehicle to pass. Very, very deep precipices on the side. It's kind of a scary deal. So inching our way along through the woods until we reached where the ancestral home, or at least the ancestral property. And then we walked in about 100 yards to a house that my cousin, second cousin, owns and lives at. And treats it sort of like a cabin because he now lives in Kingston. And then after we kind of got oriented, our cousin, who is about my age, he told us a little bit about the place. And this is my dad's cousin's son. And then we went into the woods beyond. And my siblings had paid three people to work for 3 days to cut a path from where we were back to where the real ancestral home was located. And so as we went, we just saw, you know, shrubs and bushes all along the side. And it's a very hilly property. And as we were going along, it was clear they had just cut this footpath along this hill. And we were just like 2 feet wide, that path was. And it had rained. So the younger people, including my wife, had gone ahead, and I was helping some of the older ladies to traverse this thing. And I came upon a hillside after going around a curve, and Sandra, my wife, was plastered against the hill, full-bodied, crawling up and sliding down, crawling up and sliding down. It was, and so I hurried to save her and realized that I was about to die because I wasn't going to do any better than her. And so it was like that. Somehow or the other, we decided to keep going, and we finally made it to this clearing that they had really cleared out a small area. And there were two graves, stones there representing, I guess you'd call it well, it wasn't a headstone, it was a full-bodied thing. What do you call that? Slab, yeah. A full slab. Full slab and a headstone, perfectly preserved. Two of them for my grandfather and my grandmother. And then our cousin stood there and regaled us in a circle with the story of the family that our father never told. And so he told of my great-great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, who was the last slave in the family. He was a son of the master and the enslaved woman, and one of the enslaved women, and he was a house slave. So he would have been a biracial guy. And as I've said before, biracial didn't exist until white women started having children, because the guys would say, "I don't know that kid. It was just a light-skinned black guy." So he was a house slave, and he had three children. One got educated, and two got... once slavery ended, his father gave him this property. I don't know if it was part of his estate, but it was a very hilly and very hard to traverse area. It was very tough to farm, but he had a little farm. And he passed it on to his two of his sons. One got educated and two got land. And one of those men, sons, was my grandfather. And so he got half of that property. He had 25 acres. And he had tenant farmers working on the farm, on the property. Now it's all overgrown, except for a patch of about this big of weed. I couldn't believe it. Somebody was growing some serious weed up there. Not the weeds that you pull out, I'm talking about. I'm talking about the happy weed. So we go back to the clearing, that original clearing. We're all feeling, you know, really kind of spiritual about this thing. We've heard all of this family history, which my dad just didn't want to tell. Somebody had killed a whole goat. We ate the whole goat, this guy was climbing coconut trees and throwing coconuts down, and we were drinking coconuts. It was like, you know, Fantasy Island or something. So now we're done, and we're heading back on the bus. And, you know, I'm kind of preaching without notes a little today, so I'm kind of losing track of time, so I don't want to go on too long. But we're heading on the bus back home. Where's Mike? Mike? Just wave at me, Mike. All right. Okay, if I'm going past 20 minutes, let me know, because that's my limit. So we're going back on the bus, and now it's dark. One of my brothers, we stop. We make a stop after about 20 minutes. It's dark. One of my brothers and about a half a dozen other people of two generations are leaving the bus, and I'm wondering what's going on. So my brother Bert, he's passing me down the aisle, and he nudges me and says, "You got to see this. Come on." So I said, "See what?" He said, "Come on, you got to see this." And he leaves. Well, you know, I've got to see what? I don't know. Most of the people are on the bus. And finally, I get up and I go out. By that time, he's disappeared and the other people have disappeared. But our cousin is standing at the front of this house, and the front door is open. And I said, did you see where everybody went? He said, "They went in the house." I said, "What's in the house?" He said, "Saran." So I'm wondering, Saran wrap? He said, "Go in." I said, "What's around?" "Go in," he said. So I went in, I saw to the left, there's a bedroom, and everybody was in there. So I went in, and in there is a bed. On the bed is a man in his pajamas and covered up, even though it was early evening, and it was clear that he was ill. And he was about, I learned later, 84. And he might be in his last years, last days or months. Everybody's around the bed, and one of my brothers is kneeling by the bed, talking to him, and he's just about getting up. So I said to the nearest person, "Who's this guy?" And they said, "That's your brother." Whoa. So now, I knew that our dad had had a son before he got married. He tried to live with us a couple of times, and the chemistry was bad with him and dad. And he ran away when dad was trying to beat him once. So he only stayed with us a few months. And dad had a discomfort with this brother because dad's a Pentecostal preacher, and it would be tough to explain where this kid came from. So I think he was very relieved when he ran away. In fact, dad might have beat him away, in a way. Anyway, five years ago, we heard that there were another couple siblings. Whoa. And they're all about the same age. And somebody sent a couple fuzzy pictures that did not include this guy, Saran. So now it seems like there are four kids out there, aside from the 10. I got to tell you, that was a shock for me. Somebody says, "That's your brother," on a bed, laid out, as if he is dying. So I go over to Saran, and I felt a little presumptuous because I just heard, and I said, "Hey, Saran, I'm your brother. I'm Don. I'm 70 years old. How old are you?" And he told me his age. And we talked for a little bit. And when we came back out, everybody was saying, "Boy, he looked like you." Now, I took pictures of him, but I didn't think he looked like me. You know, it's hard for you to see who looks like you. But I know his hand looked like my hand, okay? Just like my hand. And I felt like I had kind of come home to this guy. I felt authentically like, yeah, he was my brother. And I tell you, the whole room changed. My life story changed. Story of our family changed. My father changed. Even the lady who was in the shadows, she was my sister-in-law. Suddenly, I had a sister-in-law. And everything just kind of went up in the air, like you took my family like a Lego box and threw it up in the air. And I lost a few things. Our family was not this perfect little circle of 10. And my dad, for all his kind of self-righteousness, wasn't that perfect. I had to think differently about our family. The thing that struck me was I had siblings out there, and not once in our 20 years, my 20 years at home, and our Saturday morning prayer meetings, and sometimes other meetings, prayers during the week, together as a whole family circle, did we ever pray for Saran. We never prayed for my brother once. We prayed for the world. We prayed for the president. We prayed about the wars. We never prayed for my brother once. It kind of threw me off for a loop, that whole thing. But after the Lego pieces fell, another pattern began to settle clearly in my mind, that this brother of mine, I would have passed him on the street and not known him. I didn't really care about him. I didn't even know he was my brother. If you remember the story from last week, it was the story of Lazarus. I thought, what if Lazarus was the rich man's brother and he didn't know him? And who is your brother anyway? So Francis of Assisi, he gets this vision of a new way to be, and he starts giving his father's stuff away. Let me tell you, you don't want to have a saint for a kid. Or a brother. It's hard. It's easy to read about him. It's hard to live with him. He starts giving away his father's stuff. His father gets upset. He renounces his family, and he goes off to live this life as a kind of a hermit mystic. And now everybody's his father, everybody's his brother, everybody's his sister. The animals are his brothers. The sun and the moon are his brother and sister. And that's kind of what got even stronger for me out of meeting my brother. I realized that this man, this stranger, meant nothing to me. Like I said, we never mentioned his name. I thought he was a thin film of plastic that you put around food. And here he was, my brother. So who is my brother? And who is my sister? You are my brothers, and you are my sisters. And the better I get at that, is the weirder black man I become. Weird things happen when you open yourself up to the world. And we have a very tough time realizing how blind we are to our brotherhood and our sisterhood. Somebody has to take us by the hand, and you say, who's that? And they have to tell us, that's your brother. And that's what Jesus did. He takes us by the hand, and he takes us into every room, on every bus, into every train, into every job and workplace, and introduces us to our brothers and our sisters. The scripture today says, take my yoke. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, our self-concept, 10 siblings, nuclear family, I don't know what your story is. That's your ego. That's all the stuff that you've accumulated over time as your biography and your self-definition. And the problem is that we are trying to fit that definition on our souls, and it doesn't work. Your soul and your spirit is bigger than that. And I have a feeling this morning that what Jesus is saying is that we're trying to fit our self-definition, our egos, that we're trying to fit those definitions on ourself. And it can't fit. It's too small, it's too tight, it's too insufficient. That we need a bigger understanding of ourselves. That we need to embrace the breadth and the widths of our humanity. That we are all brothers and sisters. That at some point we have to go beyond mom and dad. At some point we have to go beyond our 3 or 4 or 5 siblings. And we have to embrace the brotherhood of all people. And it's not going to be easy in the sense that Francis had to leave mom and dad behind. We might not have to leave them behind in the same way, but yes, we have to embrace all people as if they were our family. And families are not comfortable with that. You know, the Jews, the Pharisees and the Sadducees had really placed so many burdens on Jewish identity. What is it to be a real Jew? They had all kinds of rules and regulations. And here came Jesus saying it's simple. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Or as Francis put it, love God and do what you will. This is very disturbing for any community to hear someone come with a new definition of what that community is. And that is why Jesus had to go. But he's saying, this is easy. This is an easy yoke. Love your neighbor as yourself. It's the awareness of this reality that is the new yoke, the easy yoke. The awareness, if we're willing to let go of the insecurity of transient relationships. Mom's going to die. Dad's going to die. Sister and brother are going to die. And so if they leave, we are lost. But if we know that everything belongs, that mom never really dies, dad never really dies, and that's mom and that's dad, that's your brother, that's your sister. If we begin to live in that space, then the stress of work and what are they going to think of me? And am I going to get that promotion? And do I have enough money? And do I have enough things? Those things all fade away. And we begin to become one with everyone. Not just one with everyone, but one with everything. If you read the Psalms today and you read the book of Job, ask the animals and they will teach you. The birds of the air and they will tell you. Ask the plants of the earth and they will teach you. And the fish of the sea will declare to you. Who among you all these does not know that the hand of God has done this? They all participate in God's creation. And we know that, you know, the urban planners know that if you put trees and plants in the space, that people feel totally different. We know that. We know that if you take a dog into your home, it can have some significant psychological impact. We know that. Why is that happening? It's because we're all connected and we all provide each other with healing influences because we're all brothers and sisters, the dogs and the cats, the sun and the moon, the trees. We're all in relationship with each other. Open up yourselves. One of the things that one of the meditations that we do in the living school is to breathe in and breathe out. And you know, when you breathe in and you kind of close the back of your throat a little bit, and so that you can actually hear the breath. When you breathe in that way and breathe out, or if you listen clear carefully, you can actually hear the wind. It sounds like the wind coming through the trees. It sounds like the wind blowing by. And if you breathe hard enough, it sounds like the storm coming through. And we are all creating the wind in our breath. We're all part of the wind, the movement of air. And we're all breathing in the same breath that Jesus breathed out. It's been circulated around the world and disseminated to all of us. We breathe it in, and the trees breathe it in, and they convert it and breathe it out. And the animals breathe it in and breathe it out. We're all connected. If you want to know if it's true, just hold your breath for about 5 minutes. So just breathe in and breathe out. And so one of the things that we do is we breathe in, and we breathe in God's love and God's grace. We breathe in God's love and God's grace because it is grace. We can't take a breath without God. The breath comes from the plants. We're all connected. We're breathing that in. Just grace. We didn't make it. It just happens automatically. And then we breathe out. And we breathe out grace. And we breathe out love on the world. So, what I'd like to do, and this is part of the practice, okay? It's meditation. Here's how the meditation evolves. You can't meditate. A nun once told Richard, you know, I try to meditate, but in 5 seconds, my brain's gone. This is a nun, by the way, so you don't feel too bad about yourselves. She said, within 5 seconds, my brain is straying. So he said, remember now that God forgives you for that, and you can return. So when your mind starts straying in meditation, just remember it's the return that makes you human, that gives you grace, right? So just keep coming back and doing it again and again, and you get better and better. Soon you can meditate for 5 minutes. Soon you can meditate for 20 minutes. Then you go back out into the world, and you get busy, and you do your thing, right? And then you get another little time at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, and you do another 5 minutes, and then you go again. Well, gradually, something starts to happen. Gradually, you'll find yourself in the busyness of work and life, and a moment of meditation hits you. It just transfers from this place and time and becomes part of a moment in your day. And you can just, you're driving down the road and you just feel fully aware. And it doesn't last long, but you felt it. That everything just went away and you were there. Just you in God's presence. And little by little, that starts to happen more and more. And more and more. And after a while, you just start to flow in that presence, in that awareness of God's presence. And the connection I want you to make between that reality and what we've talked about earlier on is that God is everywhere. We just become aware of Him in this space and time. We just become aware of God for 5 seconds, being in God's presence. But God doesn't leave. It's just an awareness. So you become aware of God in the busyness of life. And you learn that you can be busy and aware. So then, the awareness makes you aware that you're part of the whole of creation. And then you can put aside your petty preoccupations and step into a preoccupation with each other. You can make the decisions like Francis to leave some things behind and to move into fellowship with humanity on a whole other level. And that is the final goal, that we must take on a new kind of consciousness, a new kind of awareness that follows us from the place of meditation to our entire lives and frees us up to make sacrifices of our small self in the interest of the large self, which includes everyone and which includes God. When God said to Moses, who should I say sent me? God said, I am. So now you're in the I am moment with the great I am. You're being with the being. And you're able to be with the being who created all things. Now you're with the creator of all things. And you're taking on that identity. Who is my brother, Jesus said. And who is my mother? These are my brothers. And these are my mothers. That's the place we're trying to get. That's the yoke that is easy. That's the burden that is light. All burdens fall away. And the only burden we carry is the relationship with God that sits on our shoulders in perfect contour to our souls and our spirits. And we can move on into the future as a true brother and a true sister of all of creation. Now let me tell you, this is a promise. This is the good life. People take drugs for this. Really. And it doesn't satisfy. This is what everybody is craving for. An essential aspect of this awakening consists in transcending our ego-based state of consciousness. And this is the prerequisite not only for personal happiness, but also for ending the violence in our own hearts, the violence in relationships to each other, and ultimately the violent conflicts that are endemic on our planet. Come to me where I am in my awareness of God, Jesus is saying. To consciousness of your larger identity, and I will give you rest. Amen. Shall we take a few moments to practice what we just talked about? If we take a few deep breaths in and blow out through our mouths, make your breaths audible to yourself. And as you breathe in, realize that you're breathing in the love and the grace of God. And as you breathe out, realize that you're breathing out love and grace first on your family and those close to you. And then after about three breaths, we will take another wider circle. So let's do that. Let's breathe in. Now breathe in God's love and God's grace. And then breathe out God's love and God's grace onto your family and friends.